This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gaze podcast. You can hear us live on Joy 94.9 Saturday afternoon from noon via the live stream at joy.org.au/listen live. Or tune your wireless in Melbourne to
94.9
FM.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, narrow it, create it, transfer, point it, to impress it, snap it, work it, quick, erase it, write it, cut it, paste it, save it, load it, check it, quickly write it, plug it, play it, burn it, flip it, drag it, drop it, tip and zip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, view it, code it, gem and lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, crack it, switch it.
Good afternoon. This is TechnoGaze here on Joy 94.9, the show where we gaze into the world of consumer electronics, gadgets, and technology. Hello to everyone who's listening in.
No. I am Michael.
Hello to...
Pleased to meet you, Mark.
to Michael, who is here with me in the studio, as always. And, of course, hello to Arena as well.
Howdy.
How are things this week? It's been a bit of a sunny week this week, hasn't it?
It's been a very sunny week until this morning.
Mm.
There's more coming up, too. It's supposed to be 40 or something this week.
Oh, really? Protect my white, white skin from the bad, bad sun. So this is TechnoGaze, where we're
looking at Mark's skin conditions.
Yeah, it's a bit that's a bit red, I have to say.
What are we supposed to be talking about, though, guys?
We are nerds, so we talk about skin sometimes. We talk about technology. Consumer electronics is a big one this week. The Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas has been happening throughout the week.
Now, you were our Joy representative there, weren't you?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
you virtualized yourself and moved over there.
Yes, why not? I would have liked to have been there.
I think it'd be fun one year to go to CES.
Goodies. We had some vibrating underwear, I think.
We did hear about some vibrating underwear.
4K video was being demonstrated, as in streaming 4K video, so that's pretty cool.
Do you need the NBN for that?
Oh,
I
reckon you might. There was a new codec that was released as part of it, but we'll talk about that in a few moments. Google have been all over that stuff.
It needs pigeon over TCP/IP or TCP/IP over pigeon, doesn't it, for the bandwidth?
With Blu-ray discs attached to the pigeon, yes. We've got a few other ones that we forgot to cover last week. Well, we didn't forget, but we didn't have time last week.
Why
to
was
talk
that?
About.
Because too much fun with the stuff that we had.
Including the VCE, the VCE one where they're talking about doing online exams for VCE.
Right.
It's about time, isn't it? Literally. Nobody can handwrite anymore.
Well, that's perhaps the downfall of the current education system if they're not able to do that. But
we won't preempt the
spoken
story.
Like a true father, I might add.
Yes, that's the one.
And Google have got plans to partner up with Audi to do some in-car entertainment things. So.
Shiny.
It's exciting.
Mm. Oh, so not only iOS in cars, they also have Android in cars.
What? What?
Sacrilege.
Now, if you do wish to contact us while we're in the studio here, you can do so by texting us 0427JOY949. You can email us on air at joy.org.au. You can also email us during the week, as Steve has done. We have our own email address, which is technogaze@joy.org.au. We'd like to hear some notes of encouragement as Steve has provided us just before the show, in fact.
Yeah, which is nice. And the check is in the mail, Steve.
Check for what?
Check? What's that?
I don't know.
Mail?
0.05 bitcoins.
Actually, no, that's probably worth about $10,000.
Yeah, next week it'll be worth about 2 cents.
Indeed. Shall we get on to some news?
Mm.
What's first up? I'm just scrolling up to the top here. Oh, that's right, BlackBerry.
Ah,
my favourite topic.
Now,
second favourite topic after 3D printing.
And why is it your favourite topic or second favourite topic?
Because at the end of this year, a friend of mine is going to spend up to $10,000 taking me out for lunch when our pseudo bet that says value of BlackBerry shares will go down, which I will win. When they tank. So that's why I'm interested in BlackBerry.
So it's a bet that's based on the share price of BlackBerry
changing.
Your side of the bet is if they do go down in price, if they've lost value, then the total value of the loss.
Yeah, so based on a notional $10,000 investment.
Right.
Yeah. So whatever the loss is, I have to put towards lunch, and if BlackBerry shares go up, and if they go down, then he puts that same amount in.
Right.
Now, having said that...
How are you going so far?
Yeah, well, I think they've gone up by about 14%. But you've heard of Dead Cat Bounce, haven't you?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's Dead Cat Bounce.
Yes, or dead rubber, as we also call it. But $10,000, did you say you were actually going to spend up to $10,000 on
lunch?
Well,
theoretically.
Does this include flying you to some fabulous venue?
No, we have restricted to Victoria.
Oh.
Australia, sorry, rather than other Victorias.
Right. Victoria, Canada.
Or we'll have lunch at Victoria Falls. So what about BlackBerry?
Apparently they've now become a
a litigant,
patent troll,
an obnoxious litigant, maybe.
Thank
Is
you very
that
much.
Word for, I'm not any sort of lawologist.
The new SCO of the 21st and second decade.
That's going back a couple of years, isn't it? Anyway, they're suing this company called Typo Products, and Ryan Seacrest is involved in it.
Yes.
He of radio fame.
Yes.
Our brother in broadcasting and all that stuff.
We taught him everything he knows.
He aspires to be on TechnoGaze. and he could probably come on if he wanted to, because his company has this great little keyboard case.
Yes.
Which gives you a physical keyboard for your phone, right? For your iPhone. Specifically not your BlackBerry phone, because of course they already have one, which BlackBerry of course have cracked it about.
So this is the thing, right? So it apparently this keyboard looks a little bit too much like your BlackBerry keyboard.
That it has keys and it is on a phone.
No.
It's QWERTY.
The keys are slanted.
Oh, the keys are slanted.
Yes. And I think the 13.5 degree angle is patented.
Really?
No, I don't know what the angle is. But they're saying it looks too much like it.
This is just a lot about the patent system that they are working on. I presume it's the US patent system that this is all happening underneath. And they... You know, the fact that they can just sue people for the sake of a keyboard, like, what is it really? I actually looked at the photos, and it did look very BlackBerry-esque when you kind of look at it attached to an iPhone.
Is it only available in black?
I don't know.
Because a black keyboard would look a bit strange on a white iPhone.
True.
What about a red one and a blue one and a yellow one?
Yes. You should be part of their design team.
I sound like Diana Fisher. Does it come in any other colours?
Just black.
But yeah, so they've BlackBerry now going after them, aren't they? So
right,
what does that say?
They've got to raise revenue somehow.
That's right.
But here's the thing, right? So if you have a look at the Typo product thing, I thought this is not really related to the lawsuit, but it's interesting. Oh, we all have friends, says this product page. We all have friends who carry two phones, so they've got one that they can type with and one that they don't. And I'm
what?
Are you for real? Like, I know people who carry two phones because one's for work.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
I wouldn't carry a phone just to type on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's...
Odd. Odd. Anyway,
odd marketing.
We'll see what happens with that. Good old BlackBerry. If they can stay afloat just from suing people, you know. you might have to cough up for that lunch yet.
Now, also on... before we head off to a quick break, we had last week the news story that Facebook is simply not cool anymore, according to teens.
That's
the definition of what's cool, right?
That's probably.
So a study was done. I think it was a EU-funded research on global social networking trends. Had highlighted four contenders that could topple Facebook's dominance. That they include Twitter, unsurprisingly, Instagram, which is really just Facebook anyway, Snapchat and WhatsApp.
And which one of these four sites hasn't been hacked into?
I haven't heard anything about WhatsApp yet. Actually,
no, I haven't heard anything about WhatsApp either.
What's ever happened with Twitter? Have they ever been... Maybe in the early days. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, probably. But Twitter, I actually kind of see Twitter and Facebook being in the same league as each other as far as social networking goes.
I guess it's just where all their friends are and stuff as well. Like, Facebook is probably a bit of an older demographic anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and teens don't like their parents spying on them.
Yeah, and things like WhatsApp and Snapchat, more so than maybe the other two, is that you can have a very sort of close personal set of things where you just send things to certain people.
Yeah.
Which is still pretty cool. I mean, I know I would have loved that if I was that age.
It's funny.
Things around.
I think Facebook, because it's so broad, it's like you can do pretty much all that you want to do.
Mm.
Whereas the other ones are very specific.
I guess they're a subset of the functions of Facebook.
And it's almost a definition of, you know, it's a way of, you know, someone sort of defining their personality. Oh, I'm on Snapchat because that's how I roll.
There is a little bit of that, you know, oh, you're not on Snapchat yet? Well, I've been on Snapchat for ages, but
I'm using number 121.
Oh, whoopee.
Really?
No. what is Snapchat? Sorry. You're talking to the Luddite that doesn't even use Twitter.
Ask your teenage kids.
Yeah, well, I'm going to bump them off Facebook. I don't want them seeing my posts.
Shall we push on, though? We've got some more to talk about, including the Consumer Electronics Show in Vegas that's happened just last week.
Mm, big news.
Exciting news.
There's lots of new toys.
Oh, including one that's we're kicking off with, the underwear. But we'll be back with more of Technogaze in just a few moments on Joy 94.9.
Australia's most amazing gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
That's right, this is Joy 94.9. We're amazing here. And we're covering some of the latest in technology on Technogaze right now.
Technogaze 2.0.
2.0.
Oh. Actually, shouldn't we up it for the new year?
3.0.
Actually, today it is a special one.
It is?
This is episode number 53 of Technogaze 2.0, which means it's our 1 year anniversary.
Oh, happy birthday!
Let's all sing. No, I won't sing.
Happy birthday to you.
If you did want to send us a happy birthday wish, and of course I'm sure that you do, why not send us an SMS on 0427JOY949 or send us an email on onair@joy.org.au. You could even send us a happy birthday tweet at Technogaze.
Yes.
Love those things.
Mm-hmm.
The CES.
What was CES. The highlight of CES?
Well, you've pushed me down the path because you know which one I want to kick off with. And I wouldn't necessarily call it a
highlight. You've been talking about this all week, Mark. And you've been asking, where can I buy this?
I wasn't the one who noted this in the first place. I think you, in
fact. Actually, I don't think it was me. Was it? Oh, maybe. I don't know.
I think
anyway,
it was.
Anyway, shall we put everybody out of their misery? What is this about?
Connected underwear will turn you on. I think that sounds like such a you.
The internet of things.
Yeah. The internet of things.
Lacy under things.
So this is what? Underwear with a built-in vibrator?
Well, actually what it is, so it's called the Blue Motion massager. Quite a reasonable price. So there's an element of bias or sexism, I guess, in this to a degree, because it's for women's pleasure only. But it's basically a device that you pair with an iOS or Android phone.
Yes.
It's placed in your underwear and it vibrates on demand.
As controlled by your smartphone or your friend's smartphone,
this
as the case
thing.
Might be.
That's right. So it's a bit of a how's your father kind of thing.
What's the name of the company that's put it out?
Oh My Bod.
Oh My Bod. I've heard that they're calling for volunteers to test out the male version.
Have you? Did you just make that up?
I just made that up.
Oh. I'm sure you could look them up on your favourite search engine if you really wanted to see if they need beta testers. But
so Brian Dunham, who founded the company Oh My Bod, says, and he has a wife, it's a really fun way to control vibrations without anyone knowing what you're doing because the remote is on your phone. Along with his wife, Zuki, who told this particular news outlet, technology can drive couples apart, but this is using technology and gadgets to bring them closer together.
Oh, we love that here at the show, don't we?
Is it true that they beta tested this for 3 years?
I don't know. You seem to know a lot about their beta testing. Were you involved at all, Michael?
No, I wasn't involved.
I like how you casually ask these questions. Oh, I've heard that it can do this highly specific thing that I couldn't possibly have guessed.
Now, I've thought up of a new version or an add-on to this app called Undie Roulette.
Undie Roulette.
Undie Roulette. And the idea behind it is anybody can take control of these undies, but you don't know who it is. So you walk in a room and suddenly on your phone, on your app, it says, oh, there's an undie roulette person within 50 metres. And you can set various settings and just try to pick out the person in the crowd.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
Oh my bod, people, undie roulette.
Call us.
Have we got the idea for you?
That's right. Now, word has it, according to this article, and certainly not because I'm a secret beta tester, but they're looking to introduce more internet connectivity, so rather than just Bluetooth, so you'll be able to, if you are far away from your partner, is share a bit of special time with them.
Send a little hello.
You wouldn't want it to be hacked, though, would you? Could you imagine?
You could send Morse code messages.
So you'll have to repeat that.
So what else was going on at CES? Or was everybody just crowding around the MyBots booth?
Outside of people's knickers. The Steam Machine.
Oh, yes. Yes, there's...
We talked about the Steam Machine last year, right?
We did. I think this is... Steam did a bit of a hoo-ha about them partnering up with a whole bunch of hardware makers these days, would you call them hardware makers? You know, the likes of Alienware.
Yeah. CyberPower PC, Gigabyte, who make a lot of, you know, motherboards and stuff. Mm. So Steam Machine is you know, it's not a single sort of thing like the Xbox or the PlayStation where only one manufacturer does it. It's a set of, you know, common sort of standards by which... quite loosely... defined, you know, it's not you have to use this exact configuration.
Yeah.
So all these manufacturers are making these console-like gaming PCs for the use of the Steam servers.
Right.
Right. Yeah. And there were 13 of them released at revealed at CES, which is, I think the comment that a lot of people were making is the talk itself was not even 13 minutes long.
Yeah. And he was very good at saying, hey, you need to go and talk to these manufacturers now if you want information on this.
Yeah, so time to get amongst it.
It's really, like, about the platform. So Steam, because Steam OS... is a platform for gaming. It's
That's right.
Touted as being another option for... consoles,
sort of, yeah. So it's not you wouldn't obviously play console games with it. It's for, I mean, Steam is such an amazing delivery platform for games, and now of course if they can get it in people's living rooms, now comes the great takeover of Gabe Newell's great empire or whatever it is that he's hoping to do with it. And Valve, of course, are producing their own Steam controllers, or going to be producing their own Steam controllers with it, which we also talked about, which is sort of touch sensitive. It's going to be huge.
So does that mean all of the devices from these 13 manufacturers are interoperable?
In the sense that they can all do the same things, I'm sure. But I mean, and they're still being produced by these manufacturers, but they're pretty much commodity hardware, right? Like if you had a Steam machine and your hard drive was not big enough, It's basically the same as a PC. Hopefully you would be able to, you know, warranties permitting, just rip it open and put whatever stuff in there.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Sounds interesting.
So that should be good.
Yeah. Other CES stuff, the Consumer Electronics Show over in Las Vegas.
Now, Mother was in the news.
Ah, yes.
Which is an interesting name for a product.
Very Futurama-esque, this one, I think.
Mother.
Kind of, yeah. So it's a product called Mother, and it's... it's basically this device that has a whole bunch of sensors built into it, but
sensors built out of it as well, separate little sensors.
Yes,
sensors that connect to it. Yeah.
So these things are, I think, 5 by 2 centimeters in size. These little sensors that you can buy, and they have you know, the ability to know which orientation they have. I think they've got gyroscopes and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Temperature gauges as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So they're these multi-purpose sensors.
And also, I think, proximity sensors, so you know if something's close by or not.
Mm. Yeah.
So one of the examples they give on the on some of the articles is that, you know, Mother can tell if you haven't moved your toothbrush up to 9 a.m. and then gives you a little buzz to remind you to brush your teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it even does things like it can tell, let's say, if you're dealing with somebody who might be elderly and forgetful for things, you can tell whether they've, for instance, opened up their medicine box but actually haven't taken the medicine. Mm. Mm. So it recognises those patterns and then it says, hey, there's something...
Something amiss.
Yeah, something amiss.
Yeah.
So the really cool thing about it is it is very flexible. It's just like you've got these little devices and they have all these sensors and you can then go onto this console to modify and change how it reacts to certain things. So I think one of the other examples I think was you could put it in your school kid's bag and it would then know if they've got their bag and it comes back into proximity of the mother sensor, which is connected to your PC or whatever, that they've come home.
Yeah.
So, you know, those kinds of applications.
You should just chip your children.
Well,
just microchip them like a puppy. Yeah.
So this is it, right? It's a personal tracking device, I guess, of sorts, and it's almost consumer-grade spying as well. It's like you could attach this thing to anything, and as long as it gets in range of one of these mother sensors. And it seems that the way I read it, it's very similar, I think, to the way that Fitbit do their connecting for the Fitbit device.
I think it just uses Bluetooth.
It may well be based on Bluetooth, but the thing about Fitbit is that your Fitbit could connect to anyone's Fitbit dongle that's plugged into anyone's PC, and it'll sync back to the Fitbit.
To your own account.
Still. I should check that out, because I'm actually wearing a Fitbit right now, and if you're syncing my steps, dudes, I'll...
Well, but
but you know what I mean.
It can do it. It's just it just securely does it if you've got that agent installed on your machine. And I think this is going to be set up in a similar way. That's how I read the article.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
So one of these little devices, the tracking devices for this mother thing, could in fact go past a sensor on the street and have
and
information
store and report in. Yeah. Back to the mothership.
Well, if you had enough of those little sensors, I mean, you could put them at, you know, your children's school or whatever and say, well, yeah, they actually got to school and they weren't late and, you know...
or the sensor got to school in the backpack of a friend, but yes.
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 Well...
And it's been designed to work with, the Internet of Things and some of the design criteria, things like not having to change a battery or charge a battery every 2 weeks. So the battery's meant to last for 12 months.
Wow.
12 months in certain circumstances. If it's actively sensing stuff, then it's more like 1 month. Okay. But even that's pretty good. Like if it's doing temperature sensing, then I think they've got an average life of 1 month or all that sort of
thing. Right, because it's obviously doing a bit more work.
Yeah. Mm. Mm. And it can do things like another example they put was put it in the fridge. If the temperature rises above a certain amount, then it'll send an alert to you via their phone. And because it's in your home, it's always connecting to the internet anyway. Mm. So in that case, in that scenario, you could have active... understanding of temperature in your environment.
And it's not too expensive, I think, from memory. It's around about $2.99 mark, I think.
Yeah, that's pretty reasonably priced.
Yeah, and by the time we pay the Australia tax, what, $3.50?
Oh, boy.
And there's no subscription fee or anything like that as well.
Yeah. So it'd be amazing the amount of data that they'd be able to then gather as a sort of cloud-based service.
Theoretically supposed to just be yours, but...
I wonder what the terms of service are on that and how they could potentially use that data.
I wonder. Mm. I suspect it might be in favour of them being able to access stuff.
Indeed.
We are talking the Consumer Electronics Show here on TechnoGaze, some of the highlights, including the odd sensor, the consumer-grade spying sensor, underwear that vibrates. We've got a few more serious ones to talk about in a few moments. You're listening to TechnoGaze on Joy 94.9.
TechnoGaze.
And we're covering CES.
That's right.
Consumer Electronics Show.
If you wanted that in stereo, there it is for you. You could almost harmonise that, Rain Hammer.
La la la. It's obviously the biggest sort of consumer electronics show ever.
Yes.
In terms of what's on offer, and one of those is TVs, right?
Mm. TVs, 4K.
Streaming.
Because there's been a lot of talk about 4K and the idea of how much resolution that is.
Yep.
And there's, in fact, TVs that are on display in various retail outlets around the world, including Melbourne. You can go to most major outlets these days and see a 4K TV on display.
Is 4K higher resolution than what your eye can see? What's a retina display, which is meant to be...
Is that 166 points per inch, pixels per inch, 100 and something?
I think it's more around, 4K is more around the pixels, the number of pixels as opposed to the density.
Oh, okay.
So, and the other point, I mean, retina's called retina because at your typical distance that your screen is away from you, yes, it is less than what your retina can detect. Mm. Depends on the TV and how far or close that TV would be, I guess. So
4K is a bucket load of data.
Oh, it is.
It is. It's essentially like HD, but times that by four. In terms of you've got a typical HD TV has a resolution of 1/4 of the.
And I guess as televisions get bigger, if you don't go up to 4K, then they're going to look really, really dotty, aren't they? You're going to see the pixels.
Yes. Yes. And this is the thing, right? We've got this sort of fetish for bigger and bigger TVs, so someone needs to come up with new resolutions to cater for that.
Mm.
And there's really the challenge of the panels themselves, the TV screens and the pixels, and having them big enough to do that.
Yep.
And having the image processing power behind it to do that.
That's right.
Which also leads to the other aspect of it, which is codecs that are needed to stream this information to you. So
to get the data down the line.
Yeah, if you're doing it over the internet or even if it's broadcast TV or whatever, there's got to be compression algorithms that are used to get it to a size that is workable.
I was just going to say, we heard a bit of news from YouTube about that, right?
Yes. Yes, so they're talking about, and this was just before the CES conference kicked off. They've started talking about a new codec that they call VP9. Now, VP9 is a follow up to Google's previous codec, which was called, oddly enough, VP8. However, one of the key differences this time around is that VP9 is not encumbered by
a license
or license.
So it's open source essentially.
It's royalty free, I think, is the terminology they're using.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it's in parallel to another competing algorithm or codec called H.265. So, you may be familiar if you've gone into media streaming today on the internet, you see a lot of H.264. The follow-up to that is oddly called H.265.
Wow, such catchy names.
I know, right?
So easy to remember.
And is H.265 royalty-free? Or does it attract license fees?
So
there's licensing versus royalty, right? Royalty actually kind of means different thing, doesn't it?
So one of the interesting bits about the Google announcement, though, is it's got a whole bunch of manufacturers on top of it as well, including LG, Panasonic, Sony.
All the usual.
All the ones you'd expect, I guess, to be involved in such a thing. So these are TV makers, obviously, that are going to have to build this technology into the TV itself. So it's interesting that Google have gone about, getting that happening.
What about the TVs that were on offer or at least available to look at the show, though? Because we did see quite a few of those.
Yes.
And Samsung had quite a few.
Of course they did.
They had a 105-inch curved screen.
They're obsessed with this curved screen thing, aren't they?
Mm. Now, this isn't a 4K screen. It's a 2K, so they're calling it ultra-high definition.
Right.
And it does 2160p as opposed to half of that, which is, 1030p or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm. And apparently it looks quite nice. It's got a very nice timber back, and it's curved because apparently it gives you a superior viewing angle,
right,
and it gives you almost not 3D like, but almost something closer to
it. If you're sitting pretty close to it, and it feels like it's kind of wrapping around you, like IMAX, right?
Yeah,
that's kind of feels that way.
Yeah, and they've got another TV which is called the Bendy TV.
The Bendy TV,
which starts out as a flat panel, and then with your remote control, you can cause it to bend and to curve.
Right, because we've been talking a lot about Samsung and their flexible things, and I guess we're always saying, oh yeah, you could have a stretchy mobile phone or whatever, but of course TV would be
Now, nobody has come out with my ultimate panel, which is the one that you take home rolled up and then you unroll it and blue tack it to the wall.
Oh, fantastic.
That's what I want to have.
You're full of good ideas.
Oh.
Call us Samsung.
Somebody should patent me.
Should wheel you out whenever we need to make a few extra bucks.
Yeah, that's one. and follow my BlackBerry advice,
That's right.
Yes. So that was the Samsung Curve.
Now,
TV.
When they did that announcement, just to go on a tiny little tangent, so didn't they get Michael Bay involved?
Yes.
Wow, got him up on stage.
Now, Michael Bay is a famous director.
Yes, famous for specifically blowing a lot of stuff up.
Yeah. And he apparently doesn't do many endorsements, but he felt quite strongly about this and decided to endorse the Samsung TV. But things didn't go quite to plan, did they, Raina?
No. So
the teleprompter.
That's right. So something wrong turned up on that. And Michael Bay, presumably being a bit more... bit more comfortable with what happens behind the camera rather than in front of people.
You mean he can't ad-lib?
Well, I guess he didn't really have much to say about it other than I guess it's a nice TV, etc. But he ended up just going, well, okay, and walked off stage.
I think the actual word was effort. But
I didn't say that on air. So but he certainly didn't mind saying it.
No, and then he just walked off, which is a bit strange.
That's right. But he ended up doing a follow-up saying, oh, look, it's a really cool TV. Oh, you know, I had a bit of a brain sort of freeze. You know, sorry about that, et cetera. But what an interesting sort of... I felt really bad for him, to be honest. He's a famous dude and he should be able to, I think, ad-lib a little bit. But
I'd like to know how much he got paid for his endorsement.
That's right. At the very least, for that amount of money, you shouldn't probably wander off in a bit of a stink.
Yes. Now, also in CS news, we had an announcement by Sony over something called PlayStation Now.
Right.
Yes. So Sony last year purchased a company called Gaikai,
yep.
Which was a cloud streaming technology for gaming.
Right.
And some of this has been around for a while, but it kind of made news, but they didn't really sort of, it wasn't very clear what Sony were going to do with it.
But now we know.
It kind of made sense that they would try to offer some sort of cloud service for gaming, but you know, what they would actually announce has now been made clear.
Sure.
PlayStation Now is a public facing brand name for this new technology that they're using.
What does it do?
It's basically to play games via a streaming service. So
right.
They provide the grunt to do all the gaming processing. All your end needs to be able to do is display the image. So you've got to have a decent internet connection.
And send controls, right?
Yeah, and send the controls back.
It's kind of like a thin client for gaming.
I was going to say this is like remote desktop for gaming.
Yeah.
So it's nothing special then, Sony, is it?
I think it's pretty special.
No, it is fairly special, and it's very special because of the range of devices that they're planning to support.
Well, that's right. So they're talking about the PlayStation 4 obviously supporting it, which is their latest console, but also PlayStation 3 and the PlayStation Vita having support for this PlayStation Now option. So in theory, new games could be designed and developed and placed up on their PlayStation Now cloud, and PlayStation 3 users, even though they might not have the best console in the world, will still be able to play them because it's a dumb client.
Yeah, it's a way of future-proofing your technology that you've bought, your hardware.
Mm. Well, yeah, if you only need to show pictures and things.
Yeah. Now, it'll also work on TVs, tablets and smartphones, I believe.
Yes, because they are talking about building it straight into their TVs, which I think is you know, an interesting take on it. You know, Sony do have a reasonable presence in TV manufacturing.
And so it would be a good little money earner, I assume, if somebody else licensed it.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Could, or maybe even just build an app to load onto your Panasonic smart TV or Samsung.
Skinny set-top box for whatever TV you like. Yeah.
Onto your Chromecast.
What a great time to be a gamer.
So many different options available. And, you know, why not? It's obviously still got your devices on the other end as well to play the game. So you do need a controller and those things as well. But yes, that's good times to be a gamer, as you say. Is there anything else we picked up on from CES? I think that
covers our extensive coverage.
there was a lot more, obviously, and you know, jump online if you're interested in any of the latest. We thought we'd try.
There's no shortage of news about it, surely.
Well, even the big mainstream media companies, even ABC, I think, have been covering a fair bit of it as well. So, you know, we try to pick up the stuff that's not so mainstream.
That's right.
Like the odd piece of underwear, perhaps.
I'll take three in blue.
Bless.
This is Technogaze here on Joy 94.9, where we're covering some of the latest in technology, gadgets, and consumer electronics. Now, coming up in a few moments, we'll talk a little bit more on general news, including VCE, students being possibly given the option of doing testing online as opposed to your typical paper-based testing. So we'll talk about that in a few moments. This is Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Made in Melbourne for Australia and the world. Joy 94.9.
This is Technogaze on Joy 94.9. It's 17 minutes to one, and we are talking about some general news items. And we're going to kick off with VCE.
Yes. Ooh. So
I thought it was all behind me. Actually, I didn't do VCE, did I?
Right, yeah.
No, I think it was something to do with stone tablets, I remember.
A hammer and chipping.
Chisel,
guy.
Yeah.
So the Victorian Education Minister, Martin Dixon, has announced plans to introduce online testing for both primary and secondary school studies.
Wow.
Now, the planned system will first be implemented at primary school level, so they're going to roll it out in a way that's not so, you know, not, it's not straight to VCE.
Right.
But the plan is to eventually cover all school years from prep to year 12 with this online testing system.
Mm.
Presumably they're a bit risk averse and they want to get the system working on a not so important year level than VCE.
Well, of course. I mean, remember the VCE is the one that found a picture on the internet of Godzilla or whatever it was. I know, a giant robot attacking a...
As an arts communication course or something like that.
Was it history? I thought it was history. You taught history. Whoops.
Oh. And using it as a factual thing. Yes, yeah, so obviously they want to be a little bit careful about how it's deployed, but...
Well, the VCE is super high stakes, obviously, because that's
yes.
For those of you who may have done your school about the same time as Michael might not know.
There was no school in my day.
Uphill both ways. There's no. But, I mean, obviously your exam results are kind of a big deal.
Yeah. But it's going to be all data collection around a student. And, of course, security is very, very important.
Mm.
And I think until they can get the security side right, then they're going to be very, very cautious in rolling this out. You know, and one of the questions that is raised, and it's quite rightly, who owns the data and how long do you retain the data for?
Yes. Well, you'd think that the government would own. I mean,
well, who owns the data today in the paper form? Really, it's no different. It's just, you know, stored electronically.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's probably stored electronically today as well, and just the initial
like maybe the
submission of information of it.
Yes.
is not. But.
Yeah, but I think this is the death knell of handwriting. Then,
do you think so?
Well, I know, you know, from even when I've set exams where I'm so used to using the keyboard that where I've got to do something manually, if you're writing a 2-hour or 3-hour exam, your hands are about to drop off. It's totally illegible and because you don't practice it. So there's going to be even less reason to practice it.
That 2-hour long handwriting is something you need to practice.
It's tiring and not everyone can do it.
Yeah.
You know, so some people are just, you know, they're not, I mean, there are already allowances made for people who can't type for whatever reason because, you know, they broke their hand at netball or they just, you know, have a disability or whatever it is. But there are a lot of students now that, because we're out of that practice too, like you can handwrite a note to your mum, but 2 hours while you're thinking, like there's already enough stress.
Yeah, I guess, you know, there's, in terms of brain practicing stuff beforehand, I've done a lot more keyboard typing than what I have
handwriting
constantly. And all the study that's done through VCE now anyway is typing up of stuff and submitting it online anyway. So, you know, the practicing of getting in front of a piece of paper and doing it is not really there. So it kind of makes sense to move it online in that way.
And because I'm full of good ideas, I have a very good idea for Martin Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you need to identify these students uniquely. So I think we should introduce something like a national ID card where everybody can get a unique number and we can make sure that, you know, it belongs to the right person.
Oh.
Doesn't Doesn't every student have their own unique?
They do. They have a number that
only I think they only have for year 12, year 11, really? 12 for VCE. Or if they do, it's not. I don't know if it's known.
I didn't go to school in Victoria, but we got our magic number in year 9.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, at least year 9, you know, you're not tracked for your entire prep to. You know, year 8.
Mm.
Yes, we'll mark you down for VCE because in year 3 you did this.
Well, I think this actually points to a bigger question. So if we don't have unique numbers across the board and we don't have that information stored in that way, which is a pretty good assumption to make, right?
Yep.
Then perhaps there's an opportunity to, once it is actually trackable on a per-person basis, so this is over the course of 12 years, this is the way that this particular student studied and how well they did in certain areas and that sort of thing. Is there opportunity there to be able to analyse that at an aggregate level and come up with better education solutions?
Well, we were talking about that 2 weeks ago because that's part of IBM's future 5-year plan, where they're talking about all the data that will be available and how you can then tailor education to people to help them learn in a way that suits them.
It's funny how we kind of, by default, anti-tracking. Like, I would say, oh, personal number that I'm stuck with for the rest of my life, bad. But in actual fact, you know, there could be some good that comes out of it, depending on the implementation of it, right?
Sure, but as long as we don't swing the other way. I mean, part of a lot of the big complaints about standardised testing and things like NAPLAN and stuff like that, like aside from the stress and everything it puts on kids, is how it reduces the entirety of your educational output to a bunch of, you know, things on a graph.
Numbers, yeah.
And that's a bit icky. The other thing that I think is a bit odd, and like just to come from the other side, is that, sure, yeah, your VCE is kind of important for getting you into a good university or getting you into a dodgy university, whatever it is, you know, whatever it is that you want to do, or doing a vocational course or whatever. But there's got to be a point where you just got to stop caring, right? Like, I think part of the reason why, as you get a little older, that people care less about what you got for your VCE enter score, whatever it's called now.
ATAR.
I should know that. but there's a point where it's just like, well, now that you've finished, you know, you can stop caring. But if this all this data about you is following you around, possibly into the university system, attached to your entire academic knowledge or throughput and output even, and I don't know. I kind of like the fact that it wasn't the worst score, but it was, you know, not the best score either.
But it's kind of like being able to put data, that away from
me. Well, it's nice to just put that behind me and you know, stand on the strengths of my study.
It comes down to what assumptions, you know, organisations might make about you based on a particular number that happened at a particular point in time.
Well, that's the thing.
Which has a whole bunch of factors around it that may not be made obvious from that single number. Like,
but it's not going to stop people from trying, right?
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah. If it's easy to have a little number, a little card that you carry around that says, you know, Michael got this many marks over this amount of time.
Michael didn't do very well in year 12, I can tell you that much.
We'll see anyway. Either way, look, if it makes the exam sort of thing a little bit easier, I mean, just to come back to the whole stress thing, then, geez, that's got to be a win,
right? And I guess there needs to be a very clear charter on what data is going to be retained and how it's going to be retained and how it's going to be used, so that you don't have this fear that, oh, suddenly the university is going to have access to, you know, this long-term data storage.
If they do go down this path, though, I suspect that a lot of the really good information that you could get out of, you know, aggregates of, you know, students over periods of 12 years, or whatever, that the flexibility of using that information in any sort of way possible is what's going to make it really valuable.
Oh, absolutely.
Which is against the, you know, it's actually right quite the opposite of what you're talking about,
but I'm talking about specifically identifiable.
Ah, right.
To me, aggregate is very, very different.
Yes.
Yeah,
because aggregate should be in such a way that you cannot identify an individual from it.
Yeah.
Because if you can identify an individual, it's not aggregate.
When you get to very small schools, though, I mean, and if you go to a school that has, say, 6 year 12 finishes...
Yeah, then it becomes a little trickier. Yeah.
Well, anyway. Hopefully the number doesn't necessarily associate to the school. So you number it in a way that...
Well, if you just have, you know, your national ID number, then it's, you know...
But even, like, and this comes back to, we've talked about it before, of this idea of a national number or an ID number of sorts that sticks with you for your entire life. Is that number then your identity? you know, at what point is it removed from you? Is it just the fact that it's associated to your name as
Shades
an entity?
Shades of Australia card.
Well, exactly. Mm. And so what? At, if this number was used for everything, as in, you know, your access to bank accounts, you know,
medical records,
mm. all that sort yep. of thing, then that becomes your identity. So as much as it might not be physically attached to you as a person, it is very much your identity. So it really depends on, I think this whole identity discussion really relies on it being how connected is the information that's identifiable back to you. It's not so much,
yeah.
you know, is it attached to you as a person, but, it, you know, is it connected to that other piece of information, your email address on Gmail, mm. for example,
ooh,
or,
yeah.
or your Facebook profile account, or
just
that
email me at 112114.
Citizen number.
Australian email for you.
Yeah. That's right. Now, car news. We
yes.
had a little bit of that, didn't we?
We did. Following on from our little... a fender bender tie-up from a few weeks ago. It's got our... Michael and I, we have a little car sort of aspect to
car,
our...
Car fetish? Car fetish, yes.
We won't go into what they were suggesting we should do with the exhaust pipe, but...
apparently, yeah. if you shove a banana up there, it's not good for the car.
It's not good for the banana either, just quietly.
So Google and Audi
right.
are teaming up. For an in-car entertainment system that's based on Android. And, of course, this... So, iOS has been sort of a thing that's been promoted in some cars recently.
Yes.
Lots
Eyes
of cars.
Free is the what they're calling it.
Mm.
But it's an entertainment system that actually links into your iOS-based phone. So, I guess the big news about this one is it's Android-based.
But I think... Does it link into your... It doesn't link into your Android device as such. It is an Android device on the car or in the car,
right.
isn't it? So you could probably then support across multiple smartphones.
It's probably a bit more predictable as well because obviously... and I know everyone goes, oh, roll your eyes, don't say about fragmentation with Android. But, you know, supporting every single smartphone is not a car manufacturer's favourite thing to do, right?
And like, it's not their primary business either.
Exactly.
Yeah, it would be really hard to do.
Yeah, but and Audi is so focused on, you know, just that really lovely polished sort of experience with everything, right?
Mm. Yeah. And in fact, you know, we started talking about Audi with our fender bender tie-up and we got sidetracked because they've got a manual for their car where you basically hold up your phone, it's a virtual reality thing, hold up your phone to the dashboard and you click on, you know, the dial on the dashboard and it'll pop up and tell you what it means and how to use it.
Oh.
Wow. So, yeah. like... Who needs manuals
speedo.
Anymore?
Well, that's exactly it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, because
I need one of those. Does it also, if you pop the bonnet, can you place it in front of that? That's
no,
the engine?
No, but I know that BMW have developed something along those lines for mechanics.
Yeah.
So that, you know, if you're a mechanic and you want to do a certain service, you hold the... your tablet device up in front of the engine bay. It will show you where the screws are. It will give you the video to remove them so you can remove them and all that type of stuff.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's very cool.
So it's good to see that the convergence of technology is happening in the car as slowly as it seems to be.
Yeah.
I had a message from Stuart as well. Hello, Stuart. I know you're listening because you just texted us to tell us that you are making the point that we're just talking about national identity cards or the opportunity for that. And here in Australia, we don't have one. But in other countries, in fact, they do. And
many, you know, countries have, yeah.
The US is a good example. Social security numbers are their national ID. And Stuart is currently residing in Singapore, and they have a
national ID
card.
Yeah.
And him being a person from another country has one of those ID numbers as well in Singapore. So
and probably something that identifies him as a foreigner.
Interesting how we're quite anti-ID here in Australia, but other countries have embraced it and taken it. To the level that it's gone.
Yeah, I guess it depends how trustworthy you think your government is.
Mm. Now we are running out of time for the show today.
That's
in a few
unusual.
Moments, we'll have Pete come in for his latest episode of
Cravings,
of course, and we'll have a news bulletin in a few moments as well. But it's 3 minutes to one. We'll do a wrap up of the show in a few moments. This is Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Technogaze.
Now, We are wrapping up.
Yes.
With a story about TV binging.
Yes. Yes, because CES has been happening this week, and it is something that they're trying to break a record, aren't they?
Of people watching TV for as long as possible.
Yes. So, is it still going now? I think I think
they're finished.
Oh, they're finished.
So they're watching Archer. That's a great show. American Pickers, also a pretty fantastic show.
Yep.
There's another thing starting with A, so I don't think they got too far down the DVD.
What, before everyone fell asleep?
That's exactly right.
Why not? When you're at a tech show, you may as well nerd it up.
Yes, and just watch back-to-back TV shows for days on end.
That's all we've got time for today. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you'd like to peruse any previous episodes, you can do so by checking out our podcast. It's at joy.org.au/technogaze. Thank you, Michael, for coming in again today.
It was great fun as usual.
And thank you, Raina, for being here. Pushing buttons.
Oh, doing all the things.
Excellent job. We'll catch you next weekend. I'll see you at Midsummer tomorrow as well.
See you then.
Ciao.
Technogaze on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation. Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.